Great to have you along for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller, and today I'm really pleased to have back, after a long time not being here, V.J. Pandian, horticulture agent, educator for UW Extension in Brown County. Does a great job, and he's here to talk about, oh, we certainly talk about planting trees and shrubs in the fall season, but we can take some other issues as well. You can join in with your questions. We see Ellen's already on with a question about a tree. We'll get to her in a minute or two. What about you? Give a call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And VJ, great to have you back.
Thank you, Larry. Good to be here.
Well, it is wonderful. And, you know, fall, you know, when I think about planting trees, usually it's in the spring that I'm thinking, but fall is a good time as well to plant trees and shrubs.
Absolutely. Fall is one of the great time to plant trees. When we have a cool temperature, ample soil moisture, and the trees are receding to dormancy, they're going to focus more on root development. And the soil temperature try to stay about like 55 degrees, great for many of the trees to root out. So it's one of the best time to plant trees. So starting some like mid-September to about mid-October is one of the great time to plant trees.
You know, when I think about trees, I think about bare root when I'm planting in the spring. You're not going to get bare root this time of the year, are you?
Yeah, no. For fall planting, ball and burlap or container plantings are the best. Not a bare root. In a bare root, probably it's going to froze to death if you do a fall planting. And don't do any transplanting. So moving trees from one spot in your landscape to another spot in the fall is not a good time. So perhaps in the spring it'll be the best time to do those kind of things too.
What about fertilizing in the fall? Do you do any?
Not really. You know, I tend to tell my clients that trees are hunters. They like to hunt their own nutrients. Who feeds Mother Nature?
Mm-hmm.
When you take a walk in the park or in a wooded trails, you know, no one fertilizes it. Tree grows by itself. So what do you need to fertilize the trees? And fall is certainly not a good time to fertilize trees at all.
What about the lateness? How late can I, you know, we'll always get calls, somebody say, well, here I've got this tree and I haven't gotten around to planting it and now it's getting pretty cold. What?
I tend to get that question quite often.
I bet you
even
do.
Like in mid-November, people call me, you know, I bought this tree at a very discounted price. And how do I rescue it? How do I save it? So, well, if you happen to be in that kind of situation, probably find a protective spot in a landscape and dig a trench and bury the container or bury the burlap and mulch it heavily along with some dirt and fence around to it and water it thoroughly. Hopefully the tree survives the winter. And next spring, then you can take back from this trench and plant it in an ideal location. Generally, like I said, mid-September to mid-October is ideal to plant, but you can push it a little bit till about late October. But not all species are ideal for fall planting. So if you're talking like beech, peach, or cherry trees or magnolias, they are best to be planted in springtime.
Springtime.
Yes.
Okay. That makes good sense. You mentioned water, and I think that's something that we sometimes forget about. And I would think if you're planting in the fall, you'd want to be watering or making sure there's enough water there right up until freeze up.
Absolutely. And especially for evergreens, they do need water. If not, they get easily desiccated in the winter time, and then they turn brown in the spring. So before you try to judge in eventual water, check your soil moisture. Place your palm underneath the mulch and test it out and feel it out. If the soil is moist, then probably you can skip watering it.
Yeah.
If it's pretty dry, if you have a dry fall, then probably you may need to water it at least once a week. And before the ground freezes out, it's good to give a good soaking water, especially to evergreens.
V.J. Pandian, our guest today. Let's go to Ellen in Verona with a call. Ellen, hi. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I'm very happy to be able to get some excellent advice here. So I live in a new suburban area in Verona, and there are basically no trees around other than those that are planted by the builders or the city. And we moved into this house in July of 2011, and it has in the backyard what I think is a little leaf linden, which does not appear to have grown even an inch in the entire time we've been here. and it has already had some yellow leaves, or it gets yellow and the leaves fall off around this time of year. And in the front yard, there is a maple tree that's got the purple leaves, and we've just noticed that the bark is cracked. And for both of these, I just don't know, you know, do they need to be replaced? Do we just kind of wait and see? I don't know if linden is a particularly slow-growing tree, and it's not unusual that it would just sort of sit there for 5 years.
Okay, that's a great question. When was the linden planted?
It would have been planted probably around, it must have been around June of 2011.
Okay. Linden trees, and they do need actually a little bit of a moist soil. So check it out, you know, how often you've been watering your trees. And linden being in the basswood family, they do need like a little bit of moist condition for them actually to grow. And also, you know, see if you have planted any other like grasses or any other herbaceous perennials underneath the trees, because they often compete for water and steal most of the moisture too. So give some good watering. Once a week, give some good watering, about an inch or so. That might really help the linden to boost up its growth. As far as your maple goes, I'm suspecting you may have a type of a disorder called sunscald injury, which is associated with winter injury. So you see sometimes in the south side of the bark a long vertical crack, and that typically tells it's a sunscald. So what happens like in the month of January or February, when we suddenly get some unusual warm weather, the sap actually now thaws out, and at nighttime it freezes out. So this freezing and thawing causes an internal pressure, and the tree trunk bursts open to release those pressure out. And that causes this crack. So give some good watering to your maple tree, because maples in general have a very thin bark. So water helps them in building a thick bark. That may be able to help in avoiding the sunscald injury furthermore in the later in the part of the season.
Mm-hmm. And it's not going to kill the tree. The cracking.
Well, that section of the bark might be dead, actually. So the tree has been thriving because of the other healthy barks around to it. So if this condition progresses every year, if you stress this tree out, probably the injury gets bad and bad, and at one point it may able to kill one half of the tree.
So what would you recommend on that? Just continuing to water it, and it's not necessarily a goner in that case?
Yeah, you need to continue watering it till probably in September and until the leaf drops, if the season seems to be dry. So, my suggestion would be is to use some soaker hose or set your water hose nearby. Give one good soaking water once a week at least. You don't have to peel those bark or anything like that. It will naturally shed off itself. So watering is critical at this point.
Okay, sounds like watering is critical for both trees.
Yeah, absolutely. And make sure when you mulch those trees, mulch to a depth only of 2 to 3 inches, and keep the mulch 6 inches away from the bark. Sometimes people like to mulch, like a volcano, and mulch absorbs most of the moisture and doesn't let the moisture to get into the root ball. And that could also further stress the tree, and you might be thinking you've been doing a great job in watering, but unfortunately the root ball is not getting the moisture.
Oh, okay. All right, great. Well, thanks very much for your help.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org, or go ahead and post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you. We have on Facebook, as a matter of fact, we've got something from Len, who has a photo here of some lilacs and shows the leaves turning yellow, and they're kind of curling up, and wondering if these are going to be dead by, the plant's going to be dead by spring. This has been going on for a couple of years now with that particular plant.
Looks like, Larry, that Chinese lilac seems to be pretty badly stressed out. It might be planted in a spot, you know, where it gets a lot of, you know, hot baking sun, and the plant might have been stressed out due to lack of moisture. So under those circumstances, you would see some of the leaves' edges are turning brown. And then when these kind of conditions happen, spider mites take an upper hand. So we see a lot of those kind of, you know, speckling symptoms and those leaf, and that's all due to the spider mites. Spider mites, they are very tiny critters. They suck the sap underneath the leaf surfaces and causes all these kind of speckling symptoms. And also, you know, that as I said before, the lilacs are pretty badly stressed out due to lack of moisture. Give some good ample moisture. And once a week, I would say, actually flush those leaves up using a, you know, jet stream of water. That will really help in dislodging those tiny spider mite insects.
Good advice. Dennis on email wonders if you know what's plaguing his Bell and Marconi peppers. They have white spots on the plant, which are soft to the touch and look as though the outer flesh has been eaten away. Doesn't affect all of the Bell and Marconi peppers, just here and there. The hot peppers are not affected by this.
It kind of sounds like some sort of like in a fungal or bacterial pathogen kind of thing.
Yeah.
I would really suggest, Mr. Dennis, to send the sample to Dr. Brian Huddleston at the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic to get it tested, and contact your local extension office to send the photograph, and they may be able to communicate to Brian, or you can send the directly the sample to Dr. Brian Huddleston. And in the meantime, and I avoid any kind of like an overhead irrigation, because that may aggravate any kind of like a pathogens, okay?
Yeah.
And so just water it just to the base of those plants.
Let's turn to Pat in Madison next. Pat, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, I have an older maple tree in my backyard. It's rather large, and it's losing its leaves. They're turning brown and falling off. I have just oodles of them on the ground, and I don't understand what's going on.
Generally, many older maple trees, which were planted a long time ago, they might have planted a little deeper into the ground, and they may have a stem girdling root issue going on. And when a girdling root happens, it chokes the trunk of the tree, especially on one side of the trunk, it chokes out. As a result, what happens is that it prevents the movement of nutrient and water uptake onto the crown. So every year you will see actually certain section of the tree tree branches slowly dying back. You'll see smaller and smaller leaf, especially at the midsummer time when the demand for water increases up. That section of the tree may have a pretty badly stressed out leaves like which are very scorched out, or in late summer they may even turn to early fall coloration. And those are all some classic symptoms of stem girdling root. Now, the other possibility could also be because of verticillium wilt disease, that could also cause some sudden branch collapses. And they will cause actually the leaves to turn brown in a short period of time too. And that also happens in a midsummer time when there is demand for water increases out. So either way, you may want to actually take some pictures and send it to your local extension office, or bring some samples of those branches to
Lisa Johnson here in Dane County.
Okay. To get it tested for verticillium wilt, if it's really verticillium wilt or stem girdling root. If you do have a stem girdling root issue, I would strongly suggest you to contact a certified arborist, and where they do some sort of like a surgical operation to remove those girdling root underneath the ground. And the tree takes about 3 to 4 years, okay, to recover.
Do you know the type of maple? Is it a silver maple or is
No, it's just a...
The regular,
just a regular old maple tree.
Yeah.
Many Norway maples, which are planted, you know, in many city streets, okay, they do get these kind of like a stem girdling root issues.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate. At least next time when you plant a tree, make sure to plant them correctly.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you, Pat.
Hey, thank you.
Appreciate the call. You can join in too, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. I'm Larry Mueller, VJ Pandian, our on-air producer, and PK Whaley, our on-air producer, I should say, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for Garden Talk. Glad to have you along for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Vijay Pandian, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Brown County. And open lines at 800-642-1234. Give a call. Sue in Appleton up next. Sue, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hello. I have got a river birch that's about 20 years old, and all of a sudden, the leaves turned yellow, most of them, and fell off the tree. And I thought, is it dying? And then I thought, maybe it needs water. So I stuck the hose under it about 3 hours. And I thought, I wonder how much water you put on your trees. How long do you leave it run that it soaks in? Because it's a big tree.
Okay, that's a great question. River birch, and you know, in Northeast Wisconsin, okay, can be planted, but they do need a slightly acidic soil and moist condition for them to thrive. So in Northeast Wisconsin, especially in Appleton area, Green Bay area, our soil pH are very highly alkaline, so sometimes from 7.3 to 7.8. So that really stresses out the river birch. So you will see these river birch getting very chlorotic in the summertime. That's because under high pH, they get actually a micronutrient deficiency due to iron. So the leaves typically turn yellow, especially between the veins. And coupled with the moisture stress, they get really bad. The leaves get scorched out, and the leaves will start to fall or drop down. So in the last 3 weeks, we barely got any rain except for this morning. So probably combined with the stress and combined with the high pH, I think that might have really stressed out your river birch. In terms of watering your river birch, perhaps in a 1 inch of water per week is really good. And many people ask me how much a 1 inch means actually is. Mm-hmm. But it takes about 0.6 gallons. Gallons of water per square foot to get 1 inch deep. So you can estimate your you know, your drip line area of your tree, you know, and based on that, you can multiply with a factor of 0.6, and that much gallons of water is needed. So sometimes what I do recommend is that if you have a soaker hose, that's the best. And set a soaker hose for a timer for about a couple of hours, and that might really help. And make sure you mulch your river birch, because mulching helps in conserving your soil moisture. So mulch to a depth of 2 to 3 inches deep, and keep the mulch at least in a 6 inches away from the bark of the tree. Don't plant anything near, you know, close by the river birch, like, you know, any junipers or grasses. Strip those things at least 3 to 5 feet from the trunk of the tree. Don't plant anything. The river birch needs its own personal root space. And make sure in the springtime, put some elemental sulfur. Elemental sulfur helps in a little bit acidifying your soil, and that might help in minimizing your pH stress issue on your river birch.
That makes good sense. Thank you, Sue. Appreciate it.
That sounds great. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you very much for calling. Let's turn to Nancy in Duluth, Minnesota next. Hi, Nancy.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
Well, we in Duluth and some neighborhoods have had a problem for the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 years with our maples getting black tar spot.
Yeah, tar spot.
And it's getting worse, and now we have, I think it's a Schwedler maple. It's a purple leaf. Its leaves are falling, just crispy dry, falling to the ground now. Now, some of the neighborhood trees don't have that, the same purple leaf maple, but I'm wondering if there's something we can do. I know we're supposed to rake up the leaves and not let the spores penetrate the soil, but is there something else we can do, or eventually do we have to just cut the trees down?
Okay. You don't have to go to that extreme to cut down the tree.
Good.
You know, maple black tar spot in maple trees are, you know, cosmetic issue. And though they may, you know, cause some sort of, you know, defoliation, but not to an extreme scale, it's not going to cause any death or, you know, injury to your tree's health. So, especially being in the northernmost part of, you know, Wisconsin area, you know, you tend to be a little bit on the cooler side, and there's a lot of moisture around. That helps in spreading of those tar spot. And as you know, the tar spot looks like as if some aliens have did some paintings on your maple trees, you know, on those leaves, mm-hmm. you know, with a perfect black round spot. And, you know, so like you said, in the fall, just rake those leaves off, and either you can compost it or you can trash it. You know, there is, unfortunately, you know, those spores are everywhere. And I don't think the fungicide are practical to spray on, especially on a large trees. So I think probably composting might be the ideal. But you don't have to worry about it that much. I think probably, you know, it's a very cosmetic issue. Your tree should be recovering back again next spring very well.
But we don't have any colorful leaves now. And if this purple leaf tree is dropping its leaves now,
there may be another issue.
Absolutely. I'm kind of suspecting that you may have actually also have a stem girdling root issue, which is like an epidemic right now and everywhere, especially when you have a large maple trees. These girdling roots are, you know, causing a lot of, you know, tree issues. And one of the tree issues is that they cause all those branch dieback and also causes those leaves to drop too. And many of those leaves are smaller in size. They could also be scorched out very badly.
No, I didn't quite understand. You're saying girdling roots?
Yes.
Well, so, these trees are about 50 years old.
Absolutely. So the older the tree, there's a lot of probability that they may have a girdling root issue. So long time ago, we had a misconception that deeper you plant the tree, the more stable it'll be. In the last couple of decades, science has shown, no, it's not the case. So the deeper you plant the tree, the more girdling root it's going to have, because the root needs oxygen. So they try to come up to the surface. When it comes to the surface, it entangles the trunk area. And those entangled roots gets larger and larger in size, and they girdle the trunk or the bark tissue. And that really curtails the movement of nutrient water uptake and causes the slow death of the tree. So the older the tree, they're more prone to this girdling root stress issue. Especially in the midsummer time, you will see this girdling root taking an upper hand, because the demand for water stress also increases the same time.
So that so the solution is it's dead. I mean, it's going to die because we can't really dig up the roots and kind of move them out around the away from the trunk, can we?
Well, it all depends, you know, how bad this girdling root is. If your canopy is showing about 40 to 50% dieback symptom,
it is,
then probably, you know, it's worth to take it down. But if it's less than 40% or even less than 30%, there's a chance you can recover the tree. In those cases, you need to contact a certified arborist. And these professional arborists, what they do is that they have a high pressure air, and they blow around the trunk of the tree and remove the dirt. And then they're able to see actually which root is girdling actually the trunk of the tree. And then they chop those girdling root off. And then they leave the root flat like it is. And it takes about, you know, 4 or 5 years for large trees to recover back again. So again, and now it all depends upon what is the extent of damage it is happening up in your maple tree.
Okay. Well, thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Back to the tar spot for just a second. Last year, I run jog in the morning through our neighborhood. So, like with 2.5-3 miles around my home, we had tar spot everywhere last year. Now, this year, I don't see it nearly as much.
Probably if you wait till around like mid-September, you will start
seeing it again. Yeah.
So usually right around that time, you will see pretty much in southern part of Wisconsin.
Okay. So it just hasn't come yet. Okay. Or hasn't revealed itself. Andreas, up next. Thank you for calling from Gay's Mills.
Yes. Hello. I have sort of an odd question, but for 3 years I've had my son's placenta in an ice cream bucket in the freezer, and I'd like to plant it under a tree. I'm just wondering if you have any suggestions, the best type of tree or any problems, concerns that that might have. This is something that we sort of planned on doing, but have been hesitant because I'm not sure how it would work. Originally thought a crab apple tree might be a good idea, but I'll take my suggestions off the air, actually.
All right, thanks.
Okay. How far are you planning on planting it, actually, away from the tree? Are you planning on planting underneath the tree?
We lost him already. So I think he's thinking of planting a tree and having the placenta somewhere in the neighborhood of the tree.
Okay. Well, generally, I would suggest to plant a little further away from the tree. And it's not a good idea to plant underneath, especially when you're planting any species underneath the mature tree. They all compete, and the mature tree will win the war, and they'll stress out any of the new ones underneath. So it's best to plant it away.
Dig it away. Okay. Dan and Crystal Lake, it's your turn. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Andreas, I planted a sapling of a willow tree in my yard last fall, and it survived the winter, and it's really, really healthy. And I've actually relocated it, and I'm wanting to transplant that willow tree, and I just wanted some good advice so I didn't damage it during the transplant.
Well, spring is the ideal time to do any transplanting of any trees. If you try to transplant it in right now or in the fall time, you're going to cause some severe damages to the root system, and the roots may take a long time to recover back. And by the time by November comes in, when the ground starts to freeze out, there's not much time actually for the roots to establish. So they may face a lot of winter injuries. So by being a willow. Willows are very aggressive and fast growing. You may take a chance, but I strongly suggest you to consider for spring transplanting.
Now, is there, do I have any success? I've got to get it out of the ground where I'm at. I don't think I'd have access to get it out in the spring. Would there be any benefit to putting that into a planter and keeping it inside for the winter time and then putting it back out in the spring?
How big is this tree?
It's maybe 3 feet tall now.
Oh,
okay. Well, that's a great idea, actually. You could, scoop it out from the ground, put it actually, either in a container. But if you could scoop it up as much as possible, which has a lot of dirt around to it, okay, then there's a chance that you could be able to rescue this tree, if you do it right away right now, rather than waiting till October to do that. Then you're cutting a little close, actually, to, transplanting. Or if you want, you can scoop it out and put it in a container and bury the container in ground, actually, in a protected spot. And then in the spring, try to retransplant it back into ideal spot in the landscape. But make sure to water it really thoroughly, and because water is essential for the root development.
Any nutrient supplements or anything while I wait to put that in a proper spot while it's in a container?
Not really. That'll be a bad idea to provide any nutrients, because what happens that when you add any nutrients, it'll trigger more foliage growth at the expense of the roots. So your roots are already a bit stressed out from the transplant day. So you don't want to stress it out furthermore. And, it may get into a shock, and then it may not develop that really well, and then it becomes prone to winter injury. So avoid any nutrients. But water is essential.
Awesome. Well, I really appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's turn to Bill and Stevens Point next. Hi, Bill. Thank you for calling.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show.
Sure thing.
We've been listening to a lot of your stuff, and you already answered some of our questions. But the girlfriend and I planted a large floral tree garden in the back, mainly birch and flowering crab. And one of my questions is there a best time for pruning, for cutting back on the trees?
Well, late winter, early spring is one of the best time to prune trees. That is before the bud break. I know birch trees, when you prune them in early spring, or even in late winter, they tend to bleed out. But bleeding is pretty normal. It's not going to injure the tree that much. But if you find it very unaesthetic, then probably using a hose, you can flush out those sap that dripping out. So wait till about late winter, early spring to do those pruning. Fall pruning is not ideal, but if you're in a circumstances such as like one of the branches half broken, or it has been limping too much to the ground, then in that cases you can do a light pruning, okay, on those trees.
Okay.
But again, spring, early spring before the bud break is ideal, because that's the time the wound closes faster.
Right.
Okay.
So this time of the year is probably not the best time.
Not at all. So this is not a best time because, you know, we are in late summer right now. The trees are a bit stressed out. There are some active diseases and insects around to it. So having any open wound will invite these, you know, pests and diseases to attack. So like I said to you, only if you have an unusual circumstances, like, you know, the tree is have broken branches or something, then probably you can risk it and prune those things.
And I had one more question. In the far back part of our property where we border the neighbors, he has some large white pines or something. And when we got done planting what we had a bunch of lilacs left. And I pretty much just dug a bunch of holes and lined them up and just got them in the ground, and they're doing quite well, except that I don't think we've ever seen any blooms. I have a multiple selection of varieties of lilac, so they're not all the same, but even the lilacs up by the house in 3 years, I think, have only bloomed once. Is there some
shade issue, maybe?
Obviously. So light is a critical factor right up here for any of those lilacs or any of the flowering bushes to, you know, trigger its blossoms.
And go ahead.
So make sure that they get at least about 6 to 8 hours of sunlight. Now, the second thing also is that, you know, if you recently planted these lilacs, they may need at least, you know, another year or so for them to trigger its blossom. So, you know, some of the newly planted one, I would be patient a little bit and wait till about next year to see its blossom.
Okay.
And the older lilac tree that you said, which was planted 3 years ago, I would say, you know, check it out, you know, how much light you're getting. Mm-hmm. And maybe the light is maybe the factor right up there.
Is the acidity from the pine needles at all? The pines there are probably 40 years old, so there's been needles on that ground for quite a while.
Okay. Not really, sir. Many people have this kind of, you know, assumption that, you know, the pine needles might have some damage to those bushes and may decrease the acidity further or anything like that. I don't think so. That won't have an impact on the lilac bushes. I think the light will be the factor. Second of all, be careful in pruning. So sometimes, you know, after they're done with the blooming, so sometimes people don't know when to prune lilac. They may start pruning them actually in summertime. That's the worst time, like in July, if you prune them, you prune off all those flower buds off, and that may not able to bloom for the next season. So you need to be careful on when to prune the lilacs. So
there we go.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, thanks, Bill. And we'll go to Earl in Delavan and next. Hi, Earl. Thank you for calling.
Hey there, guys. My question is this. 6 years ago, I bought from my county some hybrid poplars, and I planted like a dozen of them along a big berm line, right? And I actually put in a drip irrigation system and was real careful about feeding them and stuff. And they grew fantastically. This last year, they've all started to die. And I mean, they started, you know, losing their leaves early. Sometimes a number of them last spring didn't even bud out. And they're all looking very, very sick. And I've been trying to figure out what could that possibly be.
I'm really suspecting it might be the water stress issue. Poplars needs to be planted in a moist, wet areas.
Okay.
So being planted in a berm, things tend to dry out. I know that you said you had some drip irrigation, you know, and maybe I'm thinking that that may not be sufficient, especially when you plant them a poplar in a berm, things tend to dry out much faster rate.
Right. That's why I put in the drip system, and it's not, you know, drip. It's a system designed for trees.
Okay. And coupled with some lot of wind and everything, the trees tend to transpire a lot. So I'm kind of suspecting that, you know, either maybe there still might be some lack of moisture in your berm.
Okay.
And coupled with some all those, you know, wind and everything that stresses out the tree, and the roots may get frozen out, okay, in the wintertime. So all these things could have played a factor in causing the decline on your poplar tree. Have you applied any herbicide nearby or any weeds growing nearby the berm?
No, I mean, I've kept the berm is basically mulched.
Okay.
Yeah, no, and then I've been real careful, I mean, because I was looking at the leaves and stuff, and I've not had any sign of, like, bugs or mold or fungus mm-hmm. on them. That's what's had me puzzled. I mean, it's just like all of a sudden, you know, a number of them have died, and I've got, like, four of them that are still probably have half of their leaves. When they leafed out, they actually have, like, half of their leaves left.
Okay. Check your moisture again. See okay. how much moisture these poplars are getting.
Okay.
Usually, stressed-out poplar trees, they have scorched-out leaves. They don't put forward enough growth, actually. And you will start to see some lot of winter dieback because of those kind of things, okay?
Okay.
So if it's happening up for a while, I'm really suspecting that trees are a bit stressed out.
Okay. Now, one quick question related to the previous caller.
Yeah.
We're talking about pruning.
Yeah.
What's the merit? I mean, I get mixed stories on this. Pruning sprays?
Pruning sprays?
Yeah, you know, that like sort of like the dark, what I would call dark paint that they sell in, you know, garden centers.
Oh, yeah, you don't want to use that.
Okay.
Yeah, pruning paint is not recommended at all.
Okay.
Science has shown that, you know, if you apply the pruning paint on the wounded area, it will prevent the tree from its natural healing process.
Okay.
So, in other words, it will exaggerate the injury. So, the pruning paint is recommended only when you're pruning oaks in the summertime. And oaks typically should not be pruned in the summer. But if you are in a situation that you have to prune them due to some unusual circumstances, whether the storm damaged the branches, then in that case, pruning paint is recommended only on oaks or sometimes on Native American elms. Now, in those cases, the purpose of using that pruning paint on those particular issues is that to deter those bugs, actually, they're attracting to those cut-end areas. So, and rest of the trees, and you should not use those pruning paints.
Okay. Great show, guys. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. I saw some, or maybe somebody told me, about some research on those trees when an oak is damaged. They were testing how long it took for or the elms, for the bark beetles or the insects to get to the trees, and it was a matter of minutes.
It is. I think, you know, the species releases some sort of like a scent that, you know, these beetles can easily pick it up actually in the air, and they quickly get attracted to those things. So that's one of the reasons why we all have, many township and municipalities have this pruning ordinance that they ban this pruning period during in the growing season on elms as well as oak trees.
Oh, interesting. And by the way, we have, Jill reminded me, we have an arborist on next Wednesday, too. So we can have some more on the arborist side of things then. Nancy in Hubertus, we'll get to you in just a second. Just a reminder, Vijay Pandian, our guest today, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Brown County. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us today on this edition of Garden Talk. Vijay Pandian, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Brown County. Our guest, Larry Mueller, here. Join in. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, post a photo or question on our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show, and there's some cool photos up there. We'll get to some of them in just a minute, but let's go to Nancy and Hubertus next. Nancy, thanks for waiting. Hello.
Sure. Thanks for the opportunity. We planted 4 plum trees about 5 years ago, and the first 3 years were great, and they had really good growth. And then last year we had trouble with one of them, where it budded great, but it only leafed on half of it. But now this year we have 2 that have lost their leaves, and then 2 that only have half of their leaves. Now I just looked at it, and the leaves are all kind of eaten by a bug, I assume, but I don't see any bugs. What I do see is some kind of clear gelatin kind of substance there. Mm-hmm. Wonder if there's any hope for these trees or what that is.
Okay. Nancy, do you have any grasses growing underneath the plum tree?
We have some grass, but we do have mulch around it.
Okay.
You know, maybe 2 feet or so.
Okay. Probably, Nancy, I think probably your plum tree might have been stressed out, and probably it may also have some sort of like a, you know, bacterial cankers or pathogens that may also be affecting your tree. Plums, when they get a bit stressed out, not necessarily due to moisture, but also due to winter, you know, when it stresses out the trees, they invite sometimes some of those bacterial diseases, especially when you have a cracks in the bark. These bacterial pathogens get into it and causes a bacterial canker. And some of the symptoms on this bacterial canker could be like some gums or resins oozing out in the branches or in the trunk areas, or even in the twigs, you will see those resins or saps coming out. So those are some good indication that that might be some bacterial type of diseases associated in this plum tree. My best suggestion would be is to take some photograph and send it to Dr. Brian Huddleston at the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic to confirm, see if there's any like a bacterial canker type of disease associated with this plum tree. In the meantime, I would recommend you to water the tree. Plum trees have a very thin bark, so lack of water could stress the trees really badly, and especially in the winter time, they become more prone to a lot of winter injuries. So water the trees during in the dry summer times.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thanks. And you can go online to the UW Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. You can send a photo right through that.
Absolutely. And Dr. Brian Huddleston's email ID is over there on the website, so you can send him those pictures. Or go to your local extension office and talk to your county extension educator.
Just take
about
someone
it.
With you.
But one piece of advice, Ms. Nancy, that in case if you're pruning your plum tree, make sure to disinfect your pruning tool. Just in case, you know, if it is turned out to be a bacterial canker disease, you don't want to spread it out to another plum tree. So you're using your rubbing alcohol with the 70% rubbing alcohol, or using simply as a Lysol wipe. After you take some branch samples or you prune your plum trees or dead branches, disinfect those pruning tools.
Probably after every cut.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Mary in North Lake, thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a serviceberry tree that is in decline, and I recently read that they can be susceptible to rust, much like the crabapple trees. I'm wondering what I can do if that's the case.
Okay. How old is serviceberry, Mary?
I'd say maybe 10 years.
10 years. Is it planted in full sun?
Pretty much.
Okay. Serviceberry is a great tree. I love this tree. It's a medium-sized tree. It has a gorgeous fall color, and the spring blossoms are great. In native, serviceberry tends to be planted in pot-shaded, moist area. So if you do plant them in a full sunny area, make sure to give some ample water. If not, you will start to see some branch dieback happening up. Now, serviceberry do not get rust disease. So it may be due to something else. It tend to get some powdery mildew. It tend to get some sort of leaf spot. And it may have some sort of like a branch dieback happening up because of moisture stress issue. I've seen sometimes like mature serviceberries do get some, decay issue going on in the base of the trunk tissue. So try to minimize the stress on the serviceberry. That will be, a great thing for the serviceberry tree's health. If you still think that there is some disease issue going on your serviceberry leaf, take a picture and send it to your local extension office or to Dr. Brian Huddleston.
Okay, do you think it would help? Because I do have a flower garden around that tree, and the Monarda that's in there really spread, and it is right up against the trunk and pretty thick. So if I took that out of there, would that help the tree with the water issue?
Certainly it will help. You know, let me tell you a fact. Trees doesn't like any competition around by, especially when you plant a new tree.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have any herbaceous perennials or lawns, there's always a tug of war going on for moisture competition. So whoever takes the upper hand in filling the top 1 to 2 inches of the soil layer, they win the war actually in getting most of the moisture. So being a herbaceous perennial, they have more of this fibrous root system, and they tend to stay on the top 1 to 2 inches, and they get most of the moisture. So certainly removing those herbaceous perennials or lawn grasses underneath the trees will help those serviceberries actually in getting enough moisture. Or at least I would say at least 3 to 5 feet from the trunk of the tree, don't plant anything. Keep a thin layer of wood chip mulch and keep the mulch 6 inches away from the bark.
Okay. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Let's turn to Gary in Waukesha next. Hi, Gary.
Hi. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
I have a couple of hibiscus plants that are in containers. They're about 3 to 5 years old. Some of them are braided. Some of them are just standard bushes. And I'm just wondering if you have any recommendations for overwintering and then for reintroducing in the spring. I'm wondering if it makes sense to cut off some of the root base just because they're starting maybe to get a little tight in the containers.
Okay, that's a great question. So many homeowners are thinking right now, actually, you know, how to overwinter in some of those tropical plants in Dow, like hibiscus plants. And in hibiscus, before you start thinking about, you know, bringing inside your house in September, make sure to spray your hibiscus for, or check your hibiscus for any mealybugs or aphids or anything like that, especially underneath the leaf. If you do spot them, treat them. And then probably, and now bring them inside. Gradually, first I would suggest you to bring it to the south-facing side of your window of your house, okay? And then gradually move back into other rooms in your indoor living spaces. I would not prune any roots at this time. This is going to become a stressful period for many tropical plants because they have to tend to overwinter. They're not getting enough light. So pruning anything at this time, either the roots or branches, perhaps it's going to stress out a bit. And that may create some of the shocking symptoms, shocking effect on the plant. So it's best to do any kind of pruning or transplanting into a larger container or replanting in springtime.
Good.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Linnea in Cloquet, Minnesota, your turn next. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes. Thanks for having me. So I am calling to ask about the hostas I have in my garden that are full of tiny holes, and they usually show up right away in August. They look great until August. And if there's anything that I'm doing as far as watering incorrectly or if I'm missing...
Are they pinholes or are they...
Yes, pinholes, and then some get bigger, but I would say pinholes.
Hmm. Some of the bigger holes, you know, tend to be more related to slug issues. Hostas, they are typically planted in a shaded area and they've been mulched quite a bit. So I would check for slugs. One of the easy way to detect slug is, okay, if you have a beer can and if you slide the beer can into the ground and have some little bit of beer and the next day morning, check inside the beer can, you might be able to spot some slugs.
Okay.
Or maybe if you don't have a beer can, maybe right nearby the plant, spread some wet newspaper late in the evening and sprinkle some moisture. And next day morning, check underneath the newspaper. You might be able to find some slugs.
Okay.
Slugs do tend to damage hostas, and they make actually all these holes. I'm not sure on the pinholes, but their holes of slugs are a little bit larger in size.
Okay. And then there's treatments available for...
Of course. If you came to know that it's due to slugs, perhaps the first thing I would think about is reducing the mulch around your hostas, because most of the slugs actually like to hide underneath the hostas. And slugs are usually nocturnal, okay? So they come around at the nighttime. The other option is that if you go to any, like, a garden center, there is always some, like, slug control baits are available that you can also think about using those things. But read the product label before you apply anything. But check it out first. See if it's really a slug damage or not. And then based on that, you could take some appropriate management practice. Now, UW Extension has a horticulture website. And you can go to this horticulture website, which is hot.uwx.edu. This is a great website, and it has an extension fact sheet on slug controls.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And let's turn to Steve in Fitchburg next. Hi, Steve.
Hi, thanks. I've got a maple 16-inch in diameter maybe 100 feet tall. A harder one, it was growing tall between two silver maples that we took out. And one arborist told me it had a girdling issue, that it would start dying eventually. It has not yet. The girdling root is about 3 inches in diameter. Is there any chance for that, or should I just invest in a new tree?
Okay, that's a great question. If you do know that you have girdling root issue, there is no root flare above the ground, and the roots are, you know, the tree trunk is just going like a telephone-shaped pole into the ground, then the likely chance you're going to have some girdling root issue. So most often, the girdling roots are removed when the trees are about 10 years old or so. So if a tree seems to be, the canopy seems to be healthy enough, it's not showing any dieback symptoms, then in that case, probably as a preventive, you could actually remove the girdling root, call the certified arborist, and, you know, ask him to perform the surgical operation to remove this girdling root hidden underneath the ground. And in that way, you may able to prevent, the loss of a tree. If you wait till like 25 years or 30 years, actually, then probably the extent of damage is going to be severe. In that point, it's no use to remove this girdling root. And in that case, you may need to take down the tree.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. On Facebook, we have something from Dale, who's has some milkweed plants and quite a number of milkweed bugs on those plants, wondering if he should remove those bugs.
Well, if you have a small population, probably, milkweed plants will tolerate its damage. It's not going to die because of it. It's going to actually cause some, few defoliations and things like that. But if you start wanting to have a swarms of those milkweed bugs, maybe if you want, you can use some insecticide soap to knock them out. But be aware that a lot of beneficial insects are associated with milkweed bugs, milkweed plants. So you need to be very careful, what you're spraying for it. So I would use it only at the last resort if the population tend to be, quite overwhelming.
All right. And it looks like there's quite a number there. I'd knock them off and maybe into soapy water and be done with it.
Yeah.
Vijay Pandian, our guest today. Vijay, of course, is a horticulture educator for UW Extension in Brown County. Used to do that work in the northern part of the state up around Bayfield and so forth. Great to have him with us for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest today, Vijay Pandian, horticulture educator for the UW Extension in Brown County. Great to have him with us, and thank you for listening in. We'll go right back to the phones, and Jim in Minneapolis has a question. Jim, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. I was calling about how to spread some more moss at our lawn down in Minneapolis. I've got some moss already on the north side of the house and want to replace the grass with the moss.
Okay.
Usually I get the call mostly the other ways. People hate moss.
I like the look and the feel of the moss.
Okay.
Expand that.
Okay. Well, moss actually tend to like to grow in a damp areas. So if you do want to transplant it from your backyard to the front yard area, maybe you can do it in the fall or in the springtime. But the environmental condition is very critical. As I said, moss needs some damp area, compacted soils, and slightly acidic soil would be greatly beneficial. So see if you happen to have that kind of environmental condition, soil condition, for those moss to grow. If you do, probably plant them early fall. And in case if it dies back, then make sure to provide some ample moisture in that area so to keep the area pretty moist so that the moss can thrive.
There we go. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. We have Bonnie and Beloit up next. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi. Thanks for accepting my call.
Sure.
I had my landscaping redone in 2010, and at that time, in the rear and the front sides of the house, the perimeters of the foundation, and they planted 10 to 12 Siberian cypress, and they have done well in these 6 years, except 2 years ago, two of the plants died. I replaced one of them, and it died this spring. It was planted last fall and died this spring. Now I noticed in the front there are two more of them. One is dead and one is looking dead. The needles are all brown. And I sent in a soil sample and haven't received my results yet.
Okay.
I'm wondering what's troubling my plants.
Well, Siberian cypress tend to need moist, well-drained soil. So if you plant them in the south side of your house or maybe, you know, in a boom situation like that, that they may be a bit stressed out because of lack of moisture. So even in established cypress, they tend to need some moist soil. If not, they can't able to cope up with some winter injuries, and then they prone to browning in the springtime. So tend to provide some ample moisture just onto the ground. Don't try to wet the needles. Now, for Siberian cypress, if you plan on replacing it with another cypress, make sure to plant them in the springtime. So many evergreens, okay, they tend to not perform great if you do any in a mid to late fall planting. So generally, if you want to plant them right now. I would say probably about early September would be ideal for many of these evergreens so that their root system can get established. If you wait till about early October or mid-October, then probably it's too late for many evergreens.
Okay. The soil is basically a lot of clay, and I live in a heavily wooded area where there's probably getting about a third sun.
Mm-hmm.
Not much more than that.
Okay. Well, cypress tend to tolerate, a little bit of a pot-shaded area, too. But again, probably, being in a heavy soil areas, sometimes in a hot summertime, things tend to dry out pretty badly. So in those circumstances, check your soil moisture and try to provide a good soaking water once a week or so. And reduce your mulch size and mulch depth. Make sure to mulch about 2 to 3 inches deep.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Help. Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Jeanette on Facebook has a question. I have an pagoda dogwood. It's about 4 to 5 years old, about a 2-inch diameter at the base. It needs to be moved for a construction project as soon as possible. This is not the ideal time to do that. So any thoughts on helping to increase the chances of a successful transplant with doing it in rain or later in the day or evening, keeping the tree shaded for a while, help to limit transpiration from the leaves?
Well, pagoda dogwoods, they tend to be planted in a shaded area. So if you already have an established pagoda dogwood, try to scoop them as much as possible, along with its root ball and try to move to a new location. And make sure in the new location, make sure to provide ample moisture and try to plant them in a protected shaded areas. One thing if you wait till probably about like early October, then it is too late to transplant. Ideally, spring is the best time, but if you're in a circumstances that you really have to move it right now. It doesn't matter if it's an early morning or late in the evening. So move as quick as possible and make sure to plant them in a shaded area.
Bob and Eau Claire up next. Hi, Bob. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I've got two questions. I'd like to do a follow-up. First of all, we've got a maple that we planted in 2009, and it's a nice-sized maple tree. But I noticed that the leaves started turning color. They're going red. So it's not as though the tree looks like it's dying, but it's like the tree has just decided it's early enough in autumn, and it's just going to turn color and drop the leaves. We do have hostas planted around that tree, and I'm wondering if the hostas are out competing the tree for moisture. We have an irrigation system. We do keep the tree well watered. So there's even with the hostas there, there should be adequate moisture. But do you think you were talking earlier about the tug of war that goes on between surface plants and trees? Do you think that's what's happening in this case?
Well, certainly your tree is not going to lie to you. So early fall coloration is a good sign telling you is that, hey, I'm a bit stressed out. So a lot of time, many newly planted trees are the trees in its teenage life, you know, they tend to show some early fall coloration because of moisture and heat stress. And if that stress keeps continuing year after year, you're going to start to see some branch dieback happening up because those branches don't have any thick bark and they become succumb to winter injuries. So in the springtime, you will see why the tips of some of your branches, you know, did not bud out. Those are all some signs of moisture stress associated in the previous season. So if your tree is showing those kind of early signs of fall coloration, definitely it is actually telling you that I need some moisture to thrive. And plus, deep planting could also contribute to all these things too, because when you plant them deeply, the root ball might be further down into the ground, and it may take a while for the moisture to get into the ground. So my suggestion would be to transplant your hosta to some other spot, right from the trunk of the tree, about 3 to 5 feet, okay? Keep it like a no vegetation zone except for the tree, and water them thoroughly once a week. And if a tree is a young size tree, use a tree gator bag, and it has a 5-gallon bag, and you can fill it with some water once a week, and it has a tiny hole that trickles down, and you can wrap the bag around the tree too, and it will not girdle the tree trunk. So that's another great way to water it. But mulch it only to a depth of 2 to 3 inches, and keep the mulch 6 inches away from the bark.
Okay, that's the second question. Is it, can you mulch in the fall?
Okay, you need to understand what is the purpose of mulching. Mulching, there are two things. Primarily, people tend to mulch their landscape to conserve the soil moisture. So during in the summertime when it gets hot and dry, beginning in like from mid-June, that's the time you need to start mulching it because the mulch helps in cooling the soil, helping in conserving the soil moisture. The other purpose people tend to mulch their landscape plant is probably in late fall. So in late fall, after the ground starts freezing out, and if you have very sensitive plants, like say you have a Japanese maple or paper bark maple, okay, and you want, or even sometimes some fruit trees like peaches, nectarines, plums, okay, you want to protect their roots zone, okay, because the roots don't are not really hardy compared to the shoot. So to protect the roots from those, you know, cold temperatures, sometimes you tend to mulch in those cases too. And late fall mulching, you mulch to about like 4 to 6 inches in deep, but in the springtime you need to rake those mulch back again.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yep, thanks so much for calling. And Jeff in Eau Claire has a question for us, so let's go there. Hi, Jeff.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing. What's on your mind?
Well, we have some property. We live west of Eau Claire, a couple miles. We live on the bluff above the Chippewa River. We do have a power line easement that comes across our property. And the power line company has a crew in there doing some very heavy clearing right now, which, of course, they need to do. Everybody likes electricity, so you don't want a tree to fall on the line. But they have done this every 5 or 6 years since we've been out there. And the last time, I think they unleashed, however you phrase it, some oak wilt. And in the last few years, we've lost probably 2 or 3 acres of trees due to the oak wilt. I'm wondering if there's anything, if you have any recommendations, anything we can do to try to minimize the effect of this clearing this year.
Well, first of all, call your power line company and recommend them not to prune the oak trees during the summertime.
And yeah, we tried that. They did. They were going to come in April and do it, but I said, you know, the dates we had in mind was April 15th to like November 15th. You don't cut oaks. And they were able to postpone it until now, but they just came in the end of this week and started cutting. I mean, I'd rather have them do it in winter if they had to do it, but they don't have their their priorities set up that way.
Well, if it's one or two trees, maybe right at the cut end, you can apply some pruning paint just to deter it, those sap beetles getting attracted to those ones. But, you know, the likely chance is that they may able to get an oak wilt, you know, and because pruning at this time is very risky and it could spread. If your tree seems to be, if you know that, you know, some of the trees have oak wilt, it's best to take down those trees because they may able to harbor the disease and keep spreading to other healthy trees. Because the oak wilt's not only spread by beetles, but also through the graft union underneath the roots. So if you have a series of oak trees lining next to each other, if one tree is infected, then the neighboring trees, oak trees, also going to get infected pretty soon. Then in those cases, you need to call an arborist who's going to do a trenching around the drip line area of the tree to sever any of those, you know, roots from infected trees to healthy trees, okay?
Yeah. And I've then, tried to get an arborist out to evaluate for the last couple of months and haven't been able to get anybody to come out yet. So.
Oh, really? I'm so sorry to hear that. Well, you can also go to the International Society of Arboriculture website, and you can find a list of certified arborists in your region, too. Or you can go to Wisconsin Arborist Association and find a professional through that website, too. You may be able to find some few people in the surrounding region, too. The other option is that maybe if you still have some healthy stands of oak trees, with the help of your certified arborist, you can apply some preventive fungicide. It's a trunk injection and needs to be done yearly basis. And that could be a little bit expensive, but talk to a certified arborist and get their opinion about doing some trenching and try to remove some of those infected oak trees right away.
The power line company indicated that they had some type of new solution. They called it a blue solution that they could paint on the stump or remaining exposed portion of the tree. Supposedly new, supposedly showing some good, you know, effectiveness. But have you heard of anything new to apply?
Not at this moment. I haven't heard anything like that. I'm not aware about that.
Okay.
All right. There we go. Sorry. Boy, you know, it's one of those situations I'd be going to my representative and my political representative and raising some concerns and seeing if there wasn't something that could be done, because that's kind of terrible in a way.
It's devastating.
Yeah, it really is. Well, good luck, Jeff. I'm sorry for those kinds of problems. They're terrible. I want to give Wanda in Orfordville a chance to join us. Wanda, thank you for calling.
Thank you, Larry. I'm so happy that I got in. I have snow on the mountain, which I understand is also called Bishop's Weed, the operative word being weed, so a lot of people don't like it. But I like it as a ground cover in my perennial bed out in front. Every year, around this time of year, the top leaves start getting brown spots on them and eventually die and look terrible, but I can pull them off and pull stems all the way to the ground if I want to. And then it's nice and pretty and a kind of a yellowish-green, fresh look underneath. I don't know if this is a normal aging thing that Bishop's Weed or Snow on the Mountain does, or do I have a rush?
Okay. Like you said, a lot of people hate Snow on the Mountain because it's a very aggressive plant, and it's hard to get rid of it. But if you like it, that's great. It looks like, you know, maybe check underneath the leaf surface. See if there is any, like, a sap-sucking insect that's causing some damage, actually, and causing some of those leaves to turn brown or crispy or maybe, you know, distorted in appearance. And maybe some spider mites or any other sap-sucking bugs could do those kind of things, especially, you know, in mid to late summertime, their population tend to peaks up. The other possibility sometimes could be is maybe if you do happen to apply any kind of like a, you know, herbicide like Roundup, or sometimes if it get drifted, and so sometimes, you know, the tips of the plants, you know, can tend to get burnt out. That's also another possibility to tend to do that. But snow in the mountains, they tend to be very drought tolerant, so, and with very aggressive plants. So, but I haven't come across that kind of issue in Brown County or in neighboring counties like that.
Hmm. Interesting. Thank you for calling. And John in Sugar Camp, thanks for calling. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question on an apple tree. It started off in the spring looking okay, but the leaves never fully developed. Looked a little black, scabbish. Now the fruit, well, most of it is... the apples are scabby also, and the leaves are still underdeveloped, and it looks like it's not going to make it for next year. Is there anything I can treat it with? Is it too late? Is there something I should be concerned about?
How old is your apple tree, John?
I'd say it's at least 10 years old, maybe 15.
Okay. Do you know what variety it might be?
You know, I should, but I don't. I don't remember.
Okay. Well, you know, apple trees, you know, during this early phase of its development, they need some good amount of water, and it should be weed-free. So right nearby the trunk of the tree, you know, pull up any of the vegetation around to it and water it thoroughly. Now, apple scab is very common on many trees, but there are some few disease-resistant varieties available in the market. And for apple scab control, there are some lot of repeated fungicide needs to be applied beginning in the springtime all the way till probably around like late summertime. So that's one of the toughest diseases to control on apple trees. So maybe perhaps in the fall, rake up those fallen leaves that have been infected, also the infected fruits, and either you trash it or you do a sincere job in composting it. And provide some good amount of moisture. That's the best you can do. Don't try to stimulate it by adding some fertilization. It tend to make situations more worse. And see what happens.
All right, there we go.
If it looks weak again in the spring, would it be best then just to cut it down and plant something different?
Well, if you start to see about more than 30 to 40% damage or dieback, then probably it's time to say goodbye to that tree. If you still see that the tree is so weak but has a smaller size leaves and everything, maybe you can stimulate it in the springtime with some fertilization, but certainly not in the fall time.
There we go. Thank you very much for calling. We had a Facebook question from Pamela. Can I plant a sugar maple in a space where a black walnut was recently growing and was removed? So she's worried about the jug lawn from the black walnut affecting the maple tree.
Wow. There are some observation that the jug lawn toxicity could still reside in the soil even after you cut down a mature black walnut for about 20 years or so. And it could actually affect many trees and in the shrubs. I would suggest to go to our horticulture website, hot.uwx.edu, and look for black walnut toxicity fact sheet. It lists species that are tolerant to jug lawn and that are sensitive to jug lawn. At this top of my mind, I couldn't remember whether sugar maple is tolerant or sensitive, but I would suggest you to go to our horticulture fact sheet and refer to that publication.
And with that, we are out of time. VJ, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today. We'll look forward to another visit.
Sure, certainly. Thanks a lot for inviting me, Larry. Appreciate it.
VJ Pandya, an horticulture educator for the University of Wisconsin Extension in Brown County. And I wanted to give a bit of a shout-out to Malik Anderson. Malik has been an intern on this program throughout the summer and just did a marvelous job, and today is his last day on the job. So we were having, some cookies and some cheese and some fruit, and really had a nice time with him. And Malik, thank you so much for all you've done for us here at Wisconsin Public Radio his goal is to be a media conglomerate owner. And so he's got a ways to go yet, but I hope he makes it. Malik, thank you very much again for all your great help and for your friendship throughout this past summer. It's been really, really great. Well, we have, of course, we got Garden Talk every Friday. It replays, the first hour replays from 7 to 8 on Saturday morning, so you can hear this again tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock. Monday at 11:45, we'll be grilling with Mad Dog and Merrill, our grilling gurus. They'll be back to talk about tailgate parties and answer your grilling questions. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Net.